Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 29. Maitreya Uvacha. Matu sampatnya vagbhanair hridi vidhastu tan smaran naichan muktipater muktim tasmat tapam upeyavan maitreya uvacha Matu sampatnya vagbhanair hridi vidhastu tan smaran naichan muktipader muktim tasmat tapam upeyavan Maitreya uvacha. The great sage Maitreya replied, Matuhu, of his mother, Sapatnya, of the co-wife, Vakbhanai, by the arrows of harsh words, Hridi, in the heart, Vidaha, pierced. To then, tan, all of them, smaran, remembering, na, not, aichat, desired, mukti patehe, from the Lord, whose lotus feet give liberation, muktim, salvation. Tasmat, therefore. Tapam, grief. Upeyavan, he suffered. I'll read the translation, but first I'll refresh your memory. What's the previous verse? Vidura has just asked Maitreya, why was it that Dhruva was not satisfied? He just saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. The Supreme Lord said, after some time, you'll attain the Vaikuntha realm. Why was he not satisfied? And this is Maitreya's reply, with a four-page purport, so it's an important verse. Maitreya answered, Dhruva Maharaja's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly grieved. And thus, when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from the material world, but at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of God had appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. So it's long, so brace yourself. This important verse has been discussed by many stalwart commentators. Why was Dhruva Maharaj not very pleased after achieving the goal of life he desired? A pure devotee is always free from any kind of material desires in the material world. One's material desires are most demonic One thinks of others as his enemies. One thinks of revenge against one's enemies. One aspires to become the topmost leader or topmost person in the material world, and thus one competes with others. This has been described in Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, as asurik. A pure devotee has no demand from the Lord. His only concern is to serve the Lord sincerely and seriously, and he is not at all concerned with what happens in the future. In the Mukunda Mala Stotra, King Kulashekar, author of the book, states in his prayer, "My dear Lord, I do not want any position of sense gratification within this material world. I simply want to engage in your service perpetually." Unquote. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshastakam also prayed, "My dear Lord, I do not want any amount of material wealth. I do not want any number of materialistic followers, nor do I want any attractive wife to enjoy. The only thing I want is that I may engage life after life in your service." Lord Chaitanya did not pray even for mukti or liberation. Paragraph. In this verse, Maitreya replied to Vidura that Dhruva Maharaj, influenced by a revengeful attitude toward his insulting stepmother, did not think of mukti, nor did he know what mukti was. Therefore, he failed to aim for mukti as his goal in life. But a pure devotee also does not want liberation. He is a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, and he does not demand anything from the Lord. This position was realized by Dhruva Maharaj when he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead present personally before him, because he was elevated to the Vasudeva platform. What's that? That's not what it is. The Vasudeva platform refers to the stage at which material contamination is conspicuous by absence only, or, in other words, where there is no question of material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and one can therefore see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because on the Vasudeva platform one can see God face to face, the Lord is also called Vasudeva. Paragraph. Dhruva Maharaja's demand for a position so exalted that it was never enjoyed even by Lord Brahma, his great-grandfather. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so affectionate and kind towards his devotee, especially to a devotee like Dhruva Maharaj, who went to render devotional service in the forest alone at the age of only 5 years. Although the motive might be impure, the Lord does not consider the motive. He is concerned with the service. But if a devotee has a particular motive, the Lord directly or indirectly knows it, and therefore he does not leave the devotee's material desires unfulfilled. These are some of the special favors by the Lord to a devotee. Paragraph. Dhruva Maharaj was offered Dhruva Loka. He even had his own name. A planet that was never resided upon by any conditioned soul, even Brahma, although the topmost living creature within this universe, was not allowed to enter the Dhruva Loka. Whenever there is a crisis within this universe, the demigods go to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shiradakshayi Vishnu, and they stand on the beach of the milk ocean. So the fulfillment of Dhruva's demand, namely a position more exalted than that of even his great-grandfather Brahma, was offered to him. Paragraph. We're not halfway done yet. Here, in this verse, the Lord is described as Mukti Pati, which means, quote, one under whose lotus feet there are all kinds of mukti, unquote. There are five kinds of mukti, Sayuja, Sarupya, Salokya, Samipya, and Sharsti. Out of these five muktis, which can be achieved by any person engaged in devotional service to the Lord, the one which is known as Sayuja is generally demanded by Mayavadi philosophers. They demand to become one with the impersonal Brahman effulgence of the Lord. In the opinion of many scholars, this Sayuja Mukti, although counted among the five kinds of mukti, is actually not mukti, because from Sayuja Mukti one may again fall down to the material world. This information we have from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, wherein it is said, Patantyada, which means they again fall down. The monistic philosopher, after executing severe austerity, merges into the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, but the living entity always wants reciprocation in loving affairs. Therefore, although the monist philosopher is elevated to the status of being one with the effulgence of the Lord, because there is no facility for associating with the Lord and rendering service unto him, he again falls into this material world, and his propensity is satisfied by materialistic welfare activities like humanitarianism, altruism, and philanthropy. There are many instances of such fall downs, even for great sannyasis in the Mayavadi school. We're halfway done. New paragraph. Therefore, Vaishnava philosophers do not accept Sayuja Mukti. Vaishnava philosophers do not accept Sayuja Mukti to be within the category of mukti. According to them, mukti means transferal to the loving service of the Lord from one's position of serving maya. Lord Chaitanya also says in this connection that the constitutional position of a living entity is to render service to the Lord. That is real mukti. When one is situated in his original position, giving up artificial positions, he is called mukta, or liberated. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is confirmed. Anyone who engages in rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord is considered a mukta, or brahma-bhuta. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee is considered to be on the Brahma-bhuta platform when he has no material contamination. Who knows the verse? Mad-bhaktim labhate param. When it once comes to the platform of devotional service from the Brahma-bhuta platform, this neutral platform, no hankering, no lamenting, seeing all living entities the same, such a soul at once comes to the platform of devotional service. In the Padma Purana, this is also confirmed. Mukti means engagement in the service of the Lord. Paragraph. The great sage Maitreya explained that Dhruva Maharaj did not desire in the beginning to engage in the service of the Lord. But he wanted an exalted position better than his great-grandfather's. This is, more or less, not service to the Lord, but service to the senses. Even if one gets the position of Brahma, the most exalted position in the material world, he is a conditioned soul. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati says that if one is elevated to real pure devotional service, he considers even great demigods like Brahma and Indra to be on an equal level with an insignificant insect. One has to be careful with that since we're in Lord Brahma's sampradaya. The reason is that an insignificant insect has a desire for sense gratification, and even a great personality like Lord Brahma also wants to dominate this material nature. Paragraph. Sense gratification means domination over material nature. The whole competition between conditioned souls is based upon domination of this material nature. Modern scientists are proud of their knowledge because they are discovering new methods to dominate the laws of material nature. They think that this is the advancement of human civilization. The more they can dominate the material laws, the more advanced they think they are. Dhruva Maharaj's propensity in the beginning was like that. He wanted to dominate this material world in a greater position than Lord Brahma. Therefore, elsewhere, it is described that after the appearance of the Lord, when Dhruva Maharaj thought and compared his determination to his final reward, he realized that what he had wanted, a few particles of broken glass, but instead had received many diamonds. As soon as he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, he immediately became conscious of the unimportance of his demand from the Lord to have an exalted position better than Lord Brahma's. Three more paragraphs and we're done. When Dhruva Maharaj became situated on the Vasudeva platform, due to seeing the Lord face to face, all his material contamination was cleared. Thus, he became ashamed of what his demands were and what he had achieved. He was very much ashamed to think that although he had gone to Madhuvan, giving up the kingdom of his father, and he had gotten a spiritual master like Narada Muni, he was still thinking of revenge against his stepmother and wanted to occupy an exalted post within this material world. These were the causes of his moroseness, even after he received all the desired benedictions from the Lord. Two more to go. When Dhruva Maharaj factually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there was no question of a revengeful attitude towards his stepmother, nor any aspiration to lord it over the material world. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind that he knew that Dhruva Maharaj wanted these, at least previously. Speaking before Dhruva Maharaj, he used the word Vedaham, previous verses, Vedaham, because when Dhruva Maharaj demanded material benefits, the Lord was present within his heart and he knew everything. The Lord always knows everything a man is thinking. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Vedaham samatitani. Final paragraph. The Lord fulfilled all Dhruva Maharaja's desires. His revengeful attitude towards his stepmother and stepbrother was satisfied. His desire for a more exalted position than that of his great-grandfather was also fulfilled. And at the same time, his eternal position in Dhruva Loka was fixed. Although Dhruva Maharaja's achievement of an eternal planet was not conceived of by him, Krishna thought, what will Dhruva do with an exalted position within this material world? Therefore, he gave Dhruva the opportunity to rule this material world for 36,000 years with unchangeable senses and the chance to perform many great sacrifices and thus become the most reputed king within this material world. And after finishing with all this material enjoyment, Dhruva would be promoted to the spiritual world, which includes the Dhruva Loka. End of purport. Matu sampatnya vag bhanayar hridi vidhastu tan smaran naichan mukti pater muktim tasmat tapam upeyavan. Maitreya answered, Dhruva Maharaja's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly aggrieved. And thus when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from this material world, but at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of God had appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. When referring to this condition, the passage that Prabhupada would consistently refer to is Swamin Katar Tosmi Varam Nayache. Swamin Katar Tosmi Varam Nayache. This comes from Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. It's not Srimad Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport. Elsewhere it is stated that. But so it means this pastime of Dhruva is described in other Puranas. It's an important pastime. It's particularly relevant to those who happen to not be liberated souls and thus have some material desire, even a little material desire, and seek devotional service along with, unavoidably, the fulfillment of those little material desires. So, karma mishra bhakti, where devotional service is mixed. And the overall lesson is how to get to shuddha bhakti when there's this little remaining residual material desire in the heart, or mountains of it, but somehow also a desire to reach the Personality of Godhead's shelter. It's very relevant. A path that Rupa Goswami has given us is from the get-go, like the very beginning, to cultivate the path of nivritti, diminishing material involvements while increasing spiritual involvements. Deliberately diminishing material involvements. So it's a two-pronged, leaving behind and accepting. And the process that's described here is not following Rupa Goswami's teaching or directly Lord Chaitanya's teaching. It's quite distinct. It's, I want something. And, oh, incidentally, if the process to get that something is the lotus feet of Krishna, okay, the lotus feet of Krishna, but I want something. So it's distinct. Repeated is the Dhruva Maharaj from the commentary of our acharyas, helping us to remember what the previous verses said. He wasn't desiring liberation. His desire was material. He wanted two things. I want revenge. And then there was a particular way that he felt he could get revenge. It wasn't taking the kingdom from his stepbrother or, you know, from his father, although he was the rightful heir to the throne of his father. It was, forget this kingdom, I want a better kingdom. That kind of revenge, I'll show you, kind of revenge. So the other was, what was that attainment? And that attainment was an exalted post within the material world that surpassed his father, who was the emperor of this world, and his father's father, who was Swayambhuva Manu, who was the emperor of the universe, and Lord Brahma, who was his father's father's father, or great-grandfather, who was the topmost living being within the universe. So, what's beyond Lord Brahma? It's the spiritual world. There isn't something material. But he didn't have a conception. He was just a five-year-old boy. He didn't even have a conception of what's beyond the material world. I want a kingdom better than Lord Brahma's, which doesn't exist in the material world. But he was really sincere. Sincerely foolish, but very sincere. Very determined. Incredibly determined. Like, a determination that we'll never know, that level of determination. From the kinds of austerities that he underwent, we could say, oh, that was Satya Yuga. You know, whatever the parallel would be in Kali Yuga for what he did in Satya Yuga, you know, it's beyond our capacity. It's unthinkable. We would die. We wouldn't even get to die. We wouldn't even get there. It's beyond our capacity what Dhruva Maharaj did. But his aspiration wasn't liberation. He didn't even have a conception of liberation. He didn't have a conception of a spiritual planet. How do you preside over a spiritual planet anyway? Because Lord Vishnu presides over spiritual planets. But apparently, he has persons, you know, that take that post, and because Dhruvaloka is the pole star, which is from the astrological perspective, it's that one spiritual planet that's within this material universe. It's Swetadweep. It's the planet which Shiradakshai Vishnu resides And there was like a throne waiting for him. It's waiting for you, Dhruva. Just finish 36,000 years in the rock pile down here, ruling the earth planet and after your father. So he did that. The phrase before the Svamin Katartosmi Varam Nayache is Kacham. So one of the few Sanskrit words that I learned as a new devotee, because Prabhupada used to use these terms regularly. Paka and Kacha. So, it was in terms of, let's say, vegetables. There's paka vegetables and there's kacha vegetables. There's really first class, and that's what he would. Or somebody would do something very nicely, and he would, this is paka. He would use that phrase, and then the opposite is, was really sloppy. Kacha, like. So, that's the phrase that's used here. Kacham vichinvan. He was vichinvan. I was searching for kacha. This like really third class thing. Piece of broken glass. That's how he's translated it. Kacha, a piece of broken glass. Kacham vichinvan. Api means although. And divya ratna. A precious jewel, a divine jewel. I was looking for broken glass and you've given me this divya ratna, your association, your personal presence. I was wanting something kacha and you gave me something paka. You gave me something divya, your association. And as a result, I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. Or the phrase is, I am completely satisfied. Krita Arta Asmi. Krita means to do. Arta means something gained or something desired. The goal, Arta. Krita Arta. I have achieved the goal, beyond the expectation. I didn't even have the proper conception, but what I have achieved, Svamin, O Lord, Kritartosmi, Varam, means any benediction, Nayache, please don't ask me to take a benediction, because what I've achieved is beyond any benediction I was wanting before, and I'm ashamed that I was looking for this broken piece of glass. How foolish. And that's the essence of the contrast between material life and spiritual life. In material life, we're looking for something ridiculous. Foolish, kacha, like, very inferior. When there's something that's so superior, that's accessible to us if we simply reach out to Krishna to take that kindness that he's extending. In the verse, tasmat, tapam upayavan. Tasmat means therefore, and tapa, we know what tapa means. It's austerity, or he's translated as grief. Upayavan as he suffered. So that's the question that's being asked. Why was Dhruva suffering? Let's just do it again. He just saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was just told, you're going back to Godhead. You will get that kingdom that you wanted, and moreover, you'll inherit your father's kingdom. Not only you'll sit on your father's lap, you'll sit on the throne. And afterwards, you'll come back to me in the spiritual world. But Dhruva was considering, I could have gone with him. Instead, because I had this stupid desire for a stupid kingdom, I have to stay here in his separation. So he was feeling very despondent. And so this tapa, or austerity, or grief, it's something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about, so I'll describe it. He writes about the purification for a Vaishnav that's necessary is regretting our very foolish involvement in material existence. Prior to coming to devotional service, we all could very embarrassingly describe the foolishness that we were involved with. We don't need to do that. But were we to look at it from a Vaishnava perspective, it's embarrassing. At least most of us. And the time that has been wasted, instead of engaging in unalloyed devotional service, or at least pursuing that stage of unalloyed devotional service, such a waste of time. It may not be gross, sinful activity, that kind, but from the perspective of what the soul's real attainment should be, it's really a big waste of time. And feeling regret for having wasted the valuable, precious human form of life. It's a form of purification, that regret, or tapa. Or here, it's, Prabhupada has translated it as grief. And that's what he's feeling. How foolish. Grief. That's a strong regret. Grief. I wasted. And during our japa retreat in Gitanagari, one of the things that we were hearing, again from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is in order to progress in chanting or to progress in spiritual life, there has to be humility. Without humility, why surrender? And gee, from a material perspective, being humble isn't good. They even have a bad name for it. Low self-esteem. Don't have low self-esteem. You know, pump yourself up. So, and etc. The whole education process, the whole material society is based on competition. Yeah, you can do it. And if you don't do it, you lose. And you don't want to lose. You have to do it and keep being like getting battered by this illusory conception. The Vaishnav conception is, I have nothing to do with that material competition program. I do have something that inspires me, and that's taking this position that says, all of that which I was so much involved with, I have deep regret for it. It's from the position of humility, one can then seek some other shelter besides the material false ego program and all that its details are made up of. Instead, from the humble perspective, not cowering and trembling in a corner and frail like a leaf shaking in the wind and you don't know what to do because you're so humble. Not like that. But from a spiritual perspective, I have nothing, there's no shelter in this material world. I am fully dependent upon Krishna. Let me take shelter of Krishna. It's an impetus for taking shelter. Again, if there's absence of humility, who needs shelter? I'm going to do it. I'm going to achieve it. I'm going to accomplish. Look at all that I've done. And the only reason I haven't is just other people got in the way. So I'll get them out of the way and I'll get it. I'll achieve so much more. A suric mentality, just as Prabhupada is describing from the Bhagavad Gita. So the devotee doesn't take shelter of that. Not because they lost so many times, they're just like wimping out. It's recognizing it's a foolish program. And I don't want to be part of that foolish program. But to come to the position of my actual identity, I need mercy. So let me take shelter. And then we were discussing that when one takes shelter, Jiva Goswami says, then there's a sense of belonging. And from that sense of belonging, like I belong to Krishna, then a relationship with Krishna, love for Krishna, it's the seed. So we'll do it again. Humility means letting go of garbage and accepting the necessity of shelter. So, in terms of chanting, it's namashraya. Nadanam, najanam, nasundrim, quoted here in the purport. Those are the letting go of what I don't want. Then there is what I want. Acceptance of the position of being simply engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Lord, birth after birth. Janma janmanishware bhavatad bhaktir ahaituki twayi. Taking shelter. And again, taking shelter provides one with a sense of belonging to Krishna. I am Krishna's. And as that matures, and Krishna, you are mine. Not like property, but my relationship with you, that's my sole possession. It's my only shelter. I have no other shelters. I belong to you. And with that belonging, then, love. The seed begins to sprout. And the feelings of love for Krishna in various ways open. Very nice. So back to Dhruva. Dhruva is lamenting. He's grieving. He's embarrassed that he previously wanted false shelters. He's appreciating the mercy that he received, but he's terribly embarrassed, terribly ashamed. And that's not bad, because he's not stuck in like lamentation and remorsefulness. He's not, you know, in the mode of ignorance. It's an inspiration for his transcendental shelter taking. Let me not go there again. Let me only take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we have to, final point here, is we have to take responsibility for our desires. Even the ones that, like, aren't Krishna conscious, if we're devotees. Because if Krishna is very especially kind, he'll take away those desires. And we sometimes pray to Krishna, please take away my desires for material stuff. But then when Krishna starts pulling, we start whining and complaining. Oh, not that one. Wait a minute. Leave that one there. Krishna, what are you doing? This is going on, as Prabhupada would say. Or the Dhruva Maharaj program, where he gets what he desires. Because that can also happen. Someone may desire for blah, blah. And then, in the course of devotional service, you attain, blah, blah. But, you know, there's a very nice prayer in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, the prayers by the residents of Jambudvip. They're glorifying the various personalities who are controllers of the universe and their magnanimity and so on. And finally they get to the personality of Godhead and say, actually there's no worshipable personality better. And here's why. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, Krishna, he does not fulfill material desire, although he did with Dhruva. He does not fulfill material desire, but if he does so, he does in such a way that one will never desire that thing again. That's the case of Dhruva. He's never going to desire such a thing again. He's fit for residence in Vaikuntha, but the resident of Vaikuntha quality has to wait, because now he's got 36,000 years to rule in the earth planet. And, you know, with that comes tribulation, like the death of his stepbrother and so on, the encounter with the yakshas that come up later in this canto. Just being in this mature world has its tribulations. So one has to be careful with, as a devotee, with what material desires we harbor. It's really the best thing. Another prayer in that same chapter, prayer by the residents of Jambudvip, is Prahlad Maharaj prays to Lord Nrisimhadev, please remove from my heart all materialistic desire. It's a nice prayer. And when that happens, don't complain. And if the other happens, and then you have to stay in the material circumstances, being the quote-unquote enjoyer of some facility, that prolongs your material sojourn. Better to have no such desire, or to desire, as Queen Kunti prays, let the material portion of such desire be removed, so that I can have only your shelter and your service. Let the affinity for my relatives, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, let the material portion of that affinity go away. Please take it away. Let me see those relationships only in a spiritual dimension. Very nice. Exactly a third position. Queen Kunti's position. Lord Chaitanya teaching and Rupa Goswami's teaching, Anyabhilashatushunyam Gyanakarmadhyanavratam, Rupa Goswami. Dhruva Maharaj, I just want this kingdom. I want revenge. And Queen Kunti's is, please remove the material portion of my affinities in this world, so that only attraction for you will remain. Very nice subject matter. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Here in purport, we see Vasudeva stage where contamination is absence. So we find that although living entity is not interested to do or to be involved in contamination, however, he is forced, he is impelled to do so. How is that, and how to get rid of that?
The living entity is forced because of previous material contact. Forced because there's the residual action of previous involvement. That's why the force. So the advice that we have from Rupa Goswami is Vacho Vegam, Manasakrota Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara. So there's like, you know, a list of six principal pushings, the pushings coming from material nature. One who is in the Vasudev state has shelter. So here comes a strong wind. So strong, everything is blowing this way and that way. But if one has strong shelter and something that's immovable, you're not blown away. So the pushing of the material energy is there because of our past contact with it, our desire to have involvement with it. And it's very strong. Coming from the Supreme Lord, that's strong. Although it's his external energy. It's coming from the Supreme Lord, acting under his direction, very strong. Because of our past contact. And with that contact, preceding the contact, is desire for enjoying that. So that's the pushing. And our natural state, so the conditioned state is our unhealthy state. And the Vasudev state is our natural state. It is our natural state. But the unhealthy state is when you contract some disease, you can say, oh, I don't like this disease. How come I can't be healthy? Because your resistance was low and you came in contact with some disease. And now you have the disease. So keep your resistance up. And even in contact with the disease, you won't contract the disease. So I made the mistake, now I have to suffer the disease. So Lord Brahma teaches us, that's okay. I'll accept that reaction, departure from the Vasudev state, as due to me because of my misdeeds. I accept that. I'll take this suffering because it's deserving. But one thing is, I won't budge an inch from the shelter of your lotus feet. That's the Vasudev state. And then one isn't buffeted by the winds. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. So in Prabhupada's purport, he made the point that Dhruva Maharaj lost his feeling of revenge as soon as he saw the Lord. So
yeah.
It appears that revenge is not necessarily a transcendental quality.
No, it's not.
So in regards to in one of Prabhupada's purports in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he mentions the six type of aggressors. So at this point, it appears that revenge is kind of encouraged in one sense. So how do you
make sense
that
of what?
Revenge is, you know...
It's mundane.
Authorized.
Revenge is authorized?
Yeah, because the six type of aggressors, you know, kidnap a wife, set fire to a house, these type of people are supposed to be killed at once, and you won't incur any simple reaction.
Oh, so but that's not revenge, that's service. Like, you know, when for example, when Arjuna fought the Pandavas, it wasn't revenge. It could have been revenge. But because he was so elevated, he put the revenge to the side and said, I'll just become a mendicant, let them have the kingdom. But when he fought, it was, you know, it was to kill, but not with the spirit of revenge. Another example that comes to mind is Prabhupada was once visiting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Mayapur at his headquarters, and the devotees found a cobra, and Bhaktisiddhanta immediately instructed, kill him. Prabhupada thought, oh, the acharya thing, you know, kill. It was disturbing. Although he didn't hurt his faith, it just, you know, why is he doing like this? And then later he found the message from Scripture. When a living entity is very envious, like a snake, that wants that living entity should be killed, and all saintly people are greatly relieved. And there's, like, so where there's a lack, maybe I've misunderstood your question, but when one is acting under the order of the Supreme Lord or under the injunction of Scripture, it's not, the spirit of revenge is no longer the propellant. It's something higher. The Lord desires this, and therefore it must be done with enthusiasm, because the Lord desires it, or it's enjoined in the Scripture, it's to be done. Revenge is something else. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll show you. That's revenge. Yes.
Thank you.
Regarding which?
Regarding your example, you know, snake, the saintly person also please when you kill the snake.
Okay.
So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj ordered to, you know, to kill snake. So it is like different kind of conscious level, like, you know, there is one example, Haridas Thakur, in the small cave there was also, you know, poison snake. But Haridas Thakur, you know, he didn't like kill or...
He didn't kill.
So it is like different level of conscious, that why...
No, not exactly. The snake that was cohabiting the cave with Haridas was not striking him. It wasn't the envious kind that with no provocation would strike him. Rather, his poison was so intense that the cave room, the space within the cave, was stinging the eyes of the people that came to see Haridas. And it was disturbing, you know, their eyes were hurting. And they were concerned about Haridas' welfare. Haridas wasn't, you know, he was like peaceful. But if they're not peaceful, then okay, I'll leave. He said, by tomorrow, if the snake is not gone, then I'll go. So it's not just, you know, Haridas Thakur was this consciousness and Bhakti Siddhanta was that consciousness, and then, you know, the other people were even less. He had the capacity to understand the nature of the snake. It wasn't envious. It wasn't deserving to be killed. And in fact, the snake politely got up and left, so that Haridas Thakur wouldn't have to get up and leave, inspired by Supersoul. Okay. That's my understanding of the distinction between those two. Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.